Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, we speak with House District 39 candidate Megan Cotter. All right. So nice to have everybody on board as we begin our approach, our descent. Got the landing gear out. This is your pilot speaking here as we make our way towards Election Day, right? And maybe you got your absentee ballot, your mail-in ballot application in the mail. That's due, I think it's next week that you got to get it in by. So if you're planning on voting by mail or dropping off in the boxes in one of the cities or towns, perhaps this would be a good time after or during this episode to fill that out and get it in. As we make our way towards Election Day, though, what we're going to do is I'm going to profile some very specific races, and then we're going to have some general conversation as well about the local stuff going on and zooming out to the presidential. But today, we look at House District 39, which is a fascinating race. It's currently occupied by Republican Justin Price. He himself was nearly primaried this year by Jerry Zarella, who is the Trump chair here in Rhode Island, the Trump campaign chair here in Rhode Island. Zarella ultimately did not do that, but Justin Price, someone who has, you know, throughout the crisis here in the COVID crisis in Rhode Island, kind of made a name for himself as being, you know, anti-masker and sort of resistant to a lot of the things that have been put forth from the science wing, shall we say. So Megan Cotter, she's a member of the Rhode Island Political Cooperative, and she brings this message to an area that has been traditionally, I'll say, conservative, whether or not it goes Democrat or Republican, but leans rather conservative. It's an area I grew up in, down in Washington County, Richmond, Exeter, Hopkinton, and Megan Cotter trying to change the dynamics of politics in that area. Now, there's some very hyper-local issues that are at play in that region, one of which is solar panels and how to site them. Should they be in open spaces where you can see them from the roadway? Should they be there at all? And that's a conversation we've had here on Bartholomew Town over the last year or so. Well, that one hyper-local issue, as you'll hear in the upcoming conversation I have with Megan, is something that maybe is going to have a very specific impact on this upcoming election. Maybe not. Maybe just her personality and her energy will be enough to sort of change the dynamics of politics in that area. To be determined, but a fascinating race. Glad to have you on board here as we make our way towards Election Day. And if you want to support the journalism, the opinion, the analysis, the entertainment that Bartholomew Town has become known for, a great way to do so is to become a B-Town Insider. Simply head to patreon.com/Bartholomew Town, and for as little as $3 per month, you can help to sustain this program. All right, let's get into it. Megan Cotter, District 39 House race down in Exeter, Hopkinton, and Richmond. We're coming off of a series of significant victories for progressives here in Rhode Island during the primary. And I asked the question this morning on Twitter, you know, hey, are these victories more a reflection of progressive policies resonating with voters, at least Democratic primary voters, I suppose, or is this more of a seeking of outsider or new voices, or a combination of both of them? So your race is going to be an interesting litmus test for that, because it's a situation where, hey, look, you know, you didn't have a primary. You're running in an area that I know well because I basically grew up there, and it leans conservative, no doubt about it. So it's really going to be fascinating to see how your messaging resonates with voters. And from what I'm seeing, it looks like people are definitely getting on board with what you have to say. Now, you're a member of the co-op as well, and it's interesting to me because I remember when the co-op first emerged, I was wondering, hey, how is this going to work outside Providence and outside Newport and outside of, you know, kind of in the quote-unquote red country of the state. So first of all, welcome to the show. And how's it going so far?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of the show.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah, during COVID, it's how I got a lot of news from my desk, you know, sitting there kind of watching you live. So I appreciate that. Yeah, I agree. You know, it's definitely going to be an interesting race. And I did see your tweet today. And I thought about that this morning when I read it. And I'm not asking people to vote for a progressive. I'm asking people to vote for an active member of the community. I'm asking people to vote for someone whose children attend the public schools, someone who cares very deeply about the direction of our state. And I think that when we strip ourselves from the progressive, liberal, right-winged, you know, when we strip all of those things away and we look at the person as an individual and what they stand for, yes, this is a conservative area, but I also think that when you have messaging that makes sense and it's things that people want, they're very much open to listening.
I would agree with that completely. And I think that we're going to see more and more situations where, again, ideologically, it's less, it seems like in this time, it's all about, all right, I'm with Trump all the way, or I'm somehow like looking to create anarchy and there's nothing in between or something like that. When in reality, actual ideas are what people are really looking for. So what's it been like out, again, I grew up in Cherokee, so I kind of know the lay of the land. And I remember, you know, it is a traditionally conservative place, but what has it been like? There certainly are plenty of people there that don't have that mindset. But more than anything, when you've knocked on doors, when you've had your events virtually or in person, what kind of response are you getting?
So I've knocked on over 600 doors. Wow. And that's only possible through teamwork and effort of my family. My husband is my driver, and you know this area well. It's very spread out. So he pulls up to the house, I jump out, I knock on the door, I talk to people, or I leave literature, and then we move on to the next house. So we have a system in place that is really effective, and it's the best use of our time. And I think in this area, knocking on doors and getting the messaging out that way is certainly the best use of a candidate's time. When I knock on doors, I ask people, you know, I explain to them who I am. Hi, I'm Megan. I'm running for office. What is important to you? That's always how I my first question, because I could talk all day about the issues, right? I mean, what does it matter? If my message isn't in line with this voter, you know, let's not waste each other's time. People are very honest, and I appreciate that. And I think that there seems to be definitely a sense of feeling forgotten. And people feel that way here. Like, no one cares about South County. No one cares about Exeter, Richmond, Hopkinton. No one is talking about the issues that are important to us at the State House. And I definitely feel when people start talking and start kind of coming out of their shell, and they're just amazed that I took the time to knock on their door. That's the other piece, is that, you know, I've knocked on doors at a family that's lived in their home for 17 years, and not one person has ever knocked on their door and asked them what issues they care about. So I think that people are really ready for some change, some new blood, and a new voice that represents them.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about Justin Price, who is the current rep there, I mean, you're talking about somebody who was nearly primaried in what would have been the only Republican primary in the state as far as the an assembly seat. Jerry Zarella nearly primaried him. I don't know, for whatever reason, at the last minute, he didn't. But I think back throughout COVID, you know, right at the beginning, he came out, he was an anti-masker, you know, he was putting explicit language, we'll say, on his mask, but, you know, using explicit language directed at Congressman Cicilline. So this is a guy who has, again, politics aside, sort of built up a reputation as just somebody who doesn't seem to resonate with the average human being, in my opinion. You know, is that something you're playing into as well? Or are you finding that people don't even know who he is? You know, what is it like down there?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know who he is. Yeah. Sometimes I go to the door and they say, who are you running against? And I'll tell them, and they say, who is he? How long has he been in office? And I don't talk negatively about my opponent. Sure. The purpose is to talk about me and why I want to represent them. Some people know exactly who he is. Some people love him. And some people very much do not love him. So there's definitely opportunity to get my name out there when I knock on a door, because most people really truly aren't paying attention. But they are more, I think more people are paying attention this election cycle than they ever have before, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think so too. And again, it'll be once we get a count of mail-in ballots, early voting, and you know, drop-off ballots, whatever you want to call it, and obviously in-person voting. Well, I think the numbers will reflect that. For obviously, it's a presidential, but even so, it's going to have strong turnout. What sort of issues are you campaigning on? Because look, there are a lot of nuances to the area that you're seeking to represent. There's a lot of conversation and signage and activity around solar fields and that sort of disruption of bucolic aspects of the region versus the need for a green slash, I guess, renewed emphasis on new energy. You know, there's a lot of gun owners down there. And I personally know people who are as liberal gets, and frankly are far to the left, but they're gun owners as well. So, you know, the co-op, are you able to kind of surgically attack some of these issues that to allow it to resonate best with voters in the portions of Charahoe, I should say, and Exeter that you're seeking to represent?
Absolutely. I am a member of the co-op. I'm a proud member of the co-op. And I believe truly deeply in my core that the co-op is, you know, we're regular people that want to fight for other regular people. And the message resonates with so many people. And I think the policies that I'm running on and the ones that are really kind of at the forefront of my campaign, you know, as far as gun control and gun owners, you know, have your guns, just be responsible, I think is really what most of us feel. And I think that when we talk about gun reform, we have to remember which, you know, what kind of gun reform and what does that look like? I think that the issues that really resonate with my family and people that I talk to are, you're absolutely right, the solar farms. That was actually one of the reasons why I jumped in the race. They're clear cutting 40 acres behind my house. My property abuts it. The more you uncover and the more information you find out about this, the more nefarious it really is. And it defeats the purpose. There's no way around it. When we're clear cutting for solar, we're stripping natural resources that we certainly will need in the future. And I'm not against solar, obviously. You know, I've been endorsed by the Sierra Club and almost every environmental group we have in Rhode Island. And I think that we need to work harder at a state level to change the direction we're going in. So if you go to my website, www.megancotterri.com, got to get that in there.
Many times, right?
Yeah. There's a petition on there, and it is a petition to the General Assembly and asking them if they can change the solar siting laws like they have in Vermont, Massachusetts, and New Jersey to make it less incentivizing for these companies to come in, clear cut, put these solar farms down, and just kind of move on. We can transition. We do need to transition to 100% renewable energy, but we can do it in a way that makes sense. And it's going to be an investment in the state. We can create hundreds and thousands, actually, of new jobs, high-paying jobs, jobs that we will desperately need moving forward with this COVID new life that we have. And one of the things that I talk about when I talk about this at the doors is, you know, it shouldn't matter who is on your town council, whether or not solar farms are pushed through. And that's one of the biggest things. In Exeter here, we had a change on our town council, complete flip, really, because of the solar issue. And I think that, you know, moving forward, we have to look at it at a much bigger picture. And this is not just an issue that impacts this community. You know, you have Western Cranston, you have Smithfield, you have Portsmouth. This has been an ongoing issue probably for the last 4 or 5 years.
Absolutely. And it's one of those issues as well that, you know, certainly I've been looking at it as quite a bit, and I've toured several sites, and boy, is there tremendous amount of consensus. You have people such as the Progressive Democrats of Rhode Island who have put forth a blueprint that is really was mirrored by the governor during her State of the Union address, the State of the State address this year. And at the same time, I've toured all throughout Northwestern Rhode Island with Republican Representative Mike Chippendale. And he sat here in this studio with me, and he and I are completely on the same page on this issue. So it's a fascinating thing. It's almost like the rural sector of Rhode Island, that like left, right is actually rural versus urban, relatively urban or suburban. And you find this tremendous amount of consensus that, hey, look, we can't be clear cutting forests. We can't be putting these devices in places where the runoff is going to impact rivers and the wildlife. And then there's the legitimate complaints about just the visuals of it. I mean, look, we all, I'm 100% believe that we should not only for energy purposes be moving towards 100% renewable energy immediately, but also from a jobs creation standpoint. At the same time, I mean, Beaver River Road in Richmond is, that's a place I used to ride my bike, and everyone in the state should be able to ride their bike there and feel like they're in the 100-acre woods. You know, it should not be. It's got to stay that way. We got to draw some lines. So what other issues are you hearing from people? You've knocked on 600 doors. What are people saying when right now about, you mentioned South County as a whole, Washington County as a whole feels overlooked. I would agree with that completely. What are you hearing from people?
Well, the other big issue, and you know, I'm making this a staple of my campaign as well. And it's not just because I'm hearing it at the doors. It's because I'm a mom with three kids in the public school. We are losing funding year after year after year. And every year we have this choice. We go into town hall and we decide, are we approving our school budget or are we potentially going to have a property tax increase? That is wrong. We have elected officials who refuse to properly fund our children. And I'm tired of it. And I think a lot of parents here are as well. You know, the schools are phenomenal here. I'm so happy that my children are getting the education that they're getting. And I think that we have a phenomenal district, both Cherahoe and EWG. But when you have to go on a Zoom call as a parent and listen to the superintendent explain how he's going to cut $800,000 out of the school budget, it's horrifying as a parent. When you work hard to live in a community that really, you know, prides itself on the schools that we have, you know, that shouldn't be happening. And the burden shouldn't fall on property owners. And the other piece is, you know, if you have a good school system, the value of your home is high. So some folks that don't have kids in the school system are still concerned about it. And then the other piece is, you know, there's elderly people in our community that are afraid that they're going to get taxed out of their homes. No one should ever feel that they could potentially be a few years out of not being able to live in a house that they've lived in their entire life. That's wrong. And we can fix that, you know?
Yeah, the assets are there. It's just about allocation and appropriately disseminating and distributing the those assets that are definitely there. Like I said, discover over 200 episodes of Rhode Island's podcast of record, the Bartholomew Town Podcast, on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your pods. Or head over to our website, ripodcast.com. What about your background? What's your story?
Oh, well, I went to URI. I have 3 degrees in English, comparative literature, and classical studies. Wow. And I graduated in 2008. And when I graduated, jobs were very scarce. And it was a tough time. I had met my husband young, and we started our family young, and we decided that it made more sense for him to work during the day and I waitressed at night. We did that for many years until all of our children were in school. And then I started my career. I work as a director of sales for a seafood company, and I love what I do. I am a woman in business, and I'm a woman in a man's business, which is presents challenges daily, as you can imagine. I, you know, really feel a lot of the experiences that I've had in life have led me to where we are right now, honestly. I think that a lot of the policies are compassion-based, and I feel that, you know, I lost my dad from colorectal cancer in 2016. I got a real good look at what the healthcare system looks like. My husband and I, and a year later, our house burned down tragically by a battery explosion. And I really feel like that was the most humbling experience that any person really could endure. And seeing what the community can do to come together for a family, it is absolutely incredible and amazing. And I feel like through all of these experiences and meeting all the people that I've met, I just feel like we deserve better from our government. And I feel like, who's fighting for these people? Who's fighting for this community? And I really want, I care so deeply about these people, all of them.
Yeah, well, it kind of shows just your enthusiasm throughout the campaign has been, it's really stuck out to me as totally authentic, and I'm just really impressed by just the efforts you've put forth already. You know, I think many people are, and as you say, Washington County, it's not necessarily front and center the way that, you know, Senate District 6 is. You know, you got Mets versus Mac, and that's sort of like the, you know, or anything like that. But at the same time, I mean, it is as critical, and you seem to have your finger on the pulse of the community for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, we've had a lot of excitement.
Are you having fun in this process?
I'm having a lot of fun. I think that the coolest part of running for office is that you get to meet so many incredible people that you would not normally meet. I mean, I've made friends with people that our circles never would have overlapped. It's just, it just wouldn't have happened, whether it be age or interest or whatever. And I truly feel very, very fortunate to have had this experience. Win or lose, I have made friends for life. And I think when I go to a door and I talk to a person and they thank me for running for office because the issues that they care about are so important to them, and they don't feel like they have been heard, and I walk away and they say thank you for doing this, that hits me that hits my heart. You know, I want to fight for this community, for all of these people, whatever their issues are. I want my door to be opened where they feel like, hey, I'm going to call my representative, and even if she can't help me, she's going to point me in the right direction because she cares. That's who I want to be as a representative. And I think that when I talk to people and they see that and they see my passion and, you know, they're grateful, that is such an amazing feeling.
Last question. If you're being honest about the, I'm sure you are, but as far as the political co-op, do you feel like that strategy has been really important and played a key role in the momentum you're seemingly building? In other words, is that sort of collaborative style of vote of campaigning something that should be embraced, maybe a model on a national scope for, obviously Rhode Island's unique, you know, we're the size of a county and so on and so forth. But even so, is that something that is, very specific to Rhode Island, or is that something you think nationally should be embraced by anybody? It could be progressives, it could be far right, could be moderates, whatever, libertarians, because any voices banding together with it, coming together for a similar cause, it seems like you're able to generate momentum. But I'm wondering if your experiences, do you think you'd be able to get where you are now without the co-op based on the hard work that you've put in on your own?
That's a really good question. I would not be running if it wasn't for the co-op. Wow. My background story for how I started this whole endeavor was I filled out to be Jen Douglas's campaign manager. I had applied for that. And I wanted to show my children that if you're angry enough and you care enough, then you need to get involved and you need to be active. And I had an interview with Janine Culkin, and, you know, we had a Zoom and we were talking, and she said, you know, some people are great campaign managers, but some people are great candidates. Have you ever thought about running for office? And, you know, I never really thought about that at all. And I thought, well, you know, my kids are still in school. It's, you know, I don't know if the time is right. And I sat and talked to my husband. We talked about it for hours on end, actually. And I dodged co-op calls. And, you know, we decided that when is the right time? My kids are young, but they're in school, and who's fighting for school funding? And, you know, these are the things that they should grow up, be an activist, care about what's happening in the world. And so that's kind of how I started to run. That's really how I decided to run for office. So the co-op is one of those forces that once you're in it, it's incredible. And it's more than, it's not so much the strategy that we have, it's more of the camaraderie and the family that we are. These are my sisters and brothers. They will fight for me just as hard as I will fight for my community, and vice versa. And we have done things like, hey, I just posted this on Twitter, share it. The support structure is really more of what the co-op offers, I think, than anything else. Yes, the strategy is great. Yes, we're hitting the ground running. I've already had Maggie Kane knock on doors for me. You know, she lost her primary, and literally that Saturday, she was out knocking on doors for me because she is my sister and she wants to see me win. Because this is not about one race. This is not about one person. This is about real change. So that's what I think the co-op means to all of us, really.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Be sure to follow me on Twitter @BillBartholomew.